Bislington. This is BillPod.com, the week in Georgia in English, coming to you from sunny London, England, which is, at least for the time being, a part of Europe. Sorry we missed last week. Been a busy trip. We're covering the entire past 2 weeks. Today is Thursday, the 17th of March, 2016. A week ago today, on the 10th of March, 1735, Nader Shah of Iran and Russia signed a deal near Ganja, Azerbaijan, and Russian troops were withdrawn from Baku. In 1804, in St. Louis, Missouri, a formal ceremony is conducted to transfer ownership of the Louisiana Territory from France to the United States. 1952, Batista leads a successful coup in Cuba and appoints himself as a provisional president. 1959, rebellion in Tibet to protect the Dalai Lama from capture by the Chinese authorities. And on this very date, on the 17th of March, in 180, Marcus Aurelius dies, leaving Commodus the sole emperor of the Roman Empire. In 461, St. Patrick dies. He is the patron saint of Ireland, was the first person to write unequivocally against the institution of slavery. He had been one himself before becoming a bishop. 1776, the British Army evacuates Boston. 1861, the Kingdom of Italy is proclaimed. 1905, Franklin Roosevelt marries Eleanor Roosevelt. They are fifth cousins. 1959, Tenzin Gyatso, the 14th Dalai Lama, flees Tibet for India. 1992, a referendum to end apartheid in South Africa is passed, 69% to 31%. Birthdays are Mercedes founder Gottlieb Daimler, illustrator Kate Greenaway, golfer Bobby Jones, crooner Nat King Cole, actor Kurt Russell, man about town Rob Lowe, soccer great Maya Hamm. I'm your host, Mark Mullen. As ever, this podcast is written by Ari Swiecka. You'll notice I said we. This week only, we have a very, very special guest, TobielPod.com's chief priest and lawgiver, Will Dunbar, Esquire.
Good to be back.
Thank you very much, Will. We're looking forward to it. Thanks again for all the concerns about last week, including those who were worried that I may have died. Such is the glory of our record of not missing episodes. If you'd like to comment on the form or ask a question, go to tobielpod.com or send us an email at tobielpod@gmail.com. On Friday, the 11th of March, a secretly recorded sex tape was leaked on YouTube showing an opposition politician having sex with a man who was not her husband. It was emailed to a bunch of Georgian journalists and then within about 20 minutes was taken down. It was posted anonymously. After the video was circulated, Prime Minister Kvitikashvili summoned law enforcement agencies and state security service to investigate it immediately. It raised discussion in Georgia over privacy rights. Rights groups and some opposition parties argued that the authorities failed in the past to properly address this issue where public figures were threatened with videos that would make elements of their private lives public. Georgia news agency came under heavy fire when they reported the identity of the politician in the sex tape. Subsequently, one of the editors was fired. Activists that evening protested outside the government building in Tbilisi with posters reading, "No to blackmail and get out of my bedroom." NGOs such as ISFED and GILA said that leaking this material in an election year is blackmail of politicians, a blow to the rule of law, fair election environment. Prime Minister Kvitikashvili then released a video address the next day condemning the leak of the secretly recorded tape as a blow to the state that is blackmail of the entire country and vowed that those who filmed and released it will be punished in an exemplary manner. There were a lot of discussions on how Misha's government used secret surveillance of people's sex lives for blackmail. Then on Monday morning, the 14th of March, more secretly recorded sex tapes were released on YouTube. The videos were of three politicians, including from the government and one of an opposition party and a TV journalist. The text on the video threatened them that they should quit their professional activities before the 31st of March. Access to YouTube was then entirely blocked for several hours in Georgia for users of internet service providers Silknet and Caucuses Online, which is almost everybody. It promoted speculation and discussion that the authorities were the ones that shut it down and were intervening to limit access to the newly leaked sex tapes. By the time YouTube was accessible again, the leaked videos had been removed. Other than those who saw the videos, no one was discussing who the people were. Journalist Inga Grigolia of Pier Valley TV came out on TV to say that she was one of the people in the video. She spoke on air saying, "I am Inga Grigolia, and I am being threatened. I am a woman, a daughter, a mother, and a friend. I have a wonderful boyfriend, and I have sex." End quote. She continued that she would not leave the country per their demands, that she will defend her rights and others' rights. People were commending her. President Mark Velashvili then weighed in. He said that Georgian society should not yield to the blackmail and terror of the dark forces behind the release of the secretly recorded sex tapes, and added that the perpetrators will be punished in an exemplary manner. Again, this exemplary, that sounds weird. He met with members of This Affects You campaign against illegal surveillance. President Mark Velashvili continued that he stands by and will protect those who were threatened. He also made a big statement about sex, saying that, quote, sex and a sex life is not a shame. I have sex. I've had a very rich sex life.
And we'll do it in like a Kennedy accent. or maybe a Clinton.
And we'll continue to have one in the future. And I will always try to make this topic free from senseless stigma. End quote.
Can you imagine if Clinton said, like, you know, I had very rich sexual relations with that woman? Yeah, I love that. It's very candid of right, he's a free thinker. He's a good guy.
Absolutely. My theory, by the way, is since so many people are talking about Donald Trump, is that he convinced Donald Trump as an apology to Hillary, figuring that Trump running for the Republicans is the only thing that could get Hillary the most uninspiring presidential candidate ever elected. But anyway. Continuing on that same day, the prosecutor's office said that five people were charged with the unlawful use and possession of those videos. They said the investigation was opened a few months ago and predates the distribution of the sex tapes.
None of that makes any sense at all. And if you look at what the prosecutor's office say, they claim that it's like this incredibly long chain passed from one former employee of the Constitutional Security Department, passes it to a lawyer who passes it to a journalist who phones up another journalist. And it's just, it's completely bizarre, the chain of events that they said led to these tapes being released. And the fact that they've known about it for months but have only just now swooped and made the arrests after they've already sort of released these things on YouTube, it seems even weirder. But yeah, there doesn't seem to be any real decent motive to the release of these tapes. I mean, if it is a sort of attempt to silence critical voices, then it seems to have backfired. And it's very laudable the way that Georgian society and indeed like Georgian politicians, many of them at least, have reacted to it by refusing to name the people involved or who people depicted. And the fact that the scandal is not a sex scandal, the scandal is a invasion of privacy scandal, and that speaks to a certain level of maturity, I think, in Georgian civil society, which is for the good. But really, I'm not sure I see any clear motive on any political actor's part in releasing these tapes other than to cause chaos or to discredit the security services. Or, I mean, I don't know. Who do you think might have a motive for releasing these tapes?
Well, I here's what I think. I think that it's the parts of the Interior Ministry, which I think are not completely under control. And I worry about that. The criminal, you know, police and others, that there's, you know, increasing amounts of corruption. Not the patrol, you know, I think that there's the sort of official part of the Interior Ministry and the less official part of the Interior Ministry.
The shadow, the deep state.
Right, the deep state, exactly. The deep state. And I think that the deep state group is kind of informally allied with, you know, the sort of Otsneba leadership, but not so formally and whatever else. I think they have these. And
they're loose cannons, though they're affiliated loose cannons.
Right. Affiliated loose cannons. Excellent. And I think that, and I think they released them. I think that was involved indicates that this is a threat of certain types of leaving the coalition. And, you know, it's when people are starting to think about who's going to run. I think there's a lot of, you know, for instance, as we'll talk about later, the stuff between the Republicans and Topazi and whatever else, mm-hmm. There's lots of what's happening now relates to who's going to be in and out.
And who's on the list and who's where. Okay.
And I think that a lot of it relates to that telling everybody, look, we've got enforcement mechanisms
right,
here.
Right, but I mean, wouldn't you also say, I mean, that's a decent, plausible supposition, but wouldn't you also say that it's spectacularly backfired? So, I mean, you know, those politicians and journalists who were depicted in those sex tapes have, in anything, I mean, aside from their family life, but as political figures, have probably emerged stronger and with greater sympathies from a lot of the people who count.
I mean, I think it has not damaged them.
And if they hoped to damage them by releasing these tapes, My point is, they haven't.
I don't think they hope to damage them. I think that they hope to embarrass them, and they were successful.
And so fear.
And it's, yes, exactly. I mean, the idea of, you know, there being a video. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's not the worst thing in the, you know, in the world, but
it's pretty bad.
But it's not, you know, nobody wants that. And yeah. So I think it was, you know, it's more that, and especially with you know, with women and whatever
sort of
else.
Muscle flexing, sort of embarrassing. Yeah. You know,
it's just nastiness. Embarrassing. And I do think that the public response has been quite good. And I think the government's response has been more sort of, oh, this is a, you know, a shocking crime, trying to sort of distance them, you know, from it and whatever else. There was not a lot of blame. And I think everybody was unified in saying this is sort of a bad thing. The question is, who is really, you know, responsible for this? And it's, you know, how distantly connected are the loose cannons? I mean, if it was them, you know, theoretically, it could have been some of the, you know, like previous national movement affiliated loose cannons that are still floating around that have the hard drives
and
stuff like that.
But that's what the government would have you believe.
Right. Which I think is less likely, but you know, who knows? I mean, at this point now there's copies of the things floating around. Students at Tbilisi State University were protesting and occupying parts of the university for about a week, protesting against the current structure and financing of student government and against the presence of state security agents in the university. First, on the 7th of March, there were protests about privileges for student government, which is called Tweetmark Veloba. Protesters were saying that student government was receiving financing and that it was meant for the larger student body, but they were using it for holiday trips in the long tradition of Tbilisi State University student government. Then a few days later, on the 10th of March, students protested again and clashed with police while trying to prevent the election of a new chancellor of the university senate. There was only one candidate for the chancellor position, Mr. Georgi Gaprindashvili. Students were against his candidacy. They said he was biased and morally compromised since he had been a member of student self-government, Vitvel Martova, and that in 2011, while he was serving on the council, members of the Mart Veloba beat up another group of students. At the time, Gaprindashvili denied that the incident ever happened. The protesting students also said that state security agents were involved in selecting the chancellor. So the students were protesting as the meeting to elect the new chancellor was taking place in the university. The assembly was canceled. Students were demanding Gaprindashvili withdraw, but he refused. The students then met with the university rector, Lado Papava, who is appealed to the students to stop their protest and proposed to hold discussions. He also confirmed the existence of ODRs at the Tbilisi State University, which raised and confirmed questions about the degree of university's autonomy from the government. As a note, ODR, or ODR, is a Russian acronym meaning Active Reserve Officer. The term refers to employees of state security agencies, formerly KGB, who in Soviet times infiltrated institutions such as political parties, business enterprises, media, and universities.
Back then, but
well, yeah, right. Okay, you know, like, well, the political party and Tbilisi State University, which was the only university. So students rejected the appeal to end their protests and said that they refused to leave the university building, would stay there all night until Gaprindashvili withdrew his candidacy. The next day, on Friday the 11th of March, students at Ilia State University joined in a gesture of solidarity. In a televised statement, Prime Minister Kvitikashvili then called on Gaprindashvili to withdraw his candidacy, saying that the priority should be to ensure the independence of the governance of higher education institutions and urge the rector to ensure the electoral process is independent and transparent. Other politicians came to the scene. The president's advisor came to talk with students. The rector called on politicians not to interfere in the university's affairs. Everyone was talking about how it is necessary to end the president's presence of ODRs at the university. Gaprindashvili still refused to withdraw his candidacy. At that point on the 11th of March in the evening, the first sex tape was leaked, and there were rumors that it was released to draw attention away from the university protest about ODRs. Students stayed at the university building over the weekend. It was covered and hashtagged. Everybody write this down, because this is a way to find out what's going on currently via Twitter. Hashtag TSU16. That is hashtag TSU16. They call themselves Auditorium.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Why?
I thought it was TSU hashtag 115 after the auditorium that you're about to say.
Well, okay, try that too. All right, try that too. TSU 115. They call themselves Auditorium 115 after the lecture hall that they made into their camp. Over the weekend, Education Minister Tamar Sanikidze met with the students occupying the university hall. By Monday, the 14th of March, a rival group in support of Tvitmartveloba, or the student government, held a counter rally on the campus. Campus grounds were filled with protesters. The two groups were cheering and whistling at each other. Inside the university hall, supporters of the two groups clashed, though they said police helped a lot in preventing larger clashes. The groups in support of Tvitmartveloba and candidate chancellor Gaprin Dashvili tried to force their way into the rector's office. He had to be escorted out safely by police. Then the Tvitmartveloba students were then demanding that the rector Papava resign because he had spoken against Gaprin Dashvili as a candidate. Tensions were high. The two groups were waiting outside the rector's office, one group shouting, "Resign," the others, "Don't resign." later, I don't know what "don't resign" is. I remember "God da de ki," but I don't know. "God da de ki." Later in the evening, Gaprin Dashvili announced that given the clashes at the university, he was withdrawing his candidacy for chancellor. The Auditorium 115 students said that even though he withdrew, they would continue to stay at the university until their other demands were met, which were to reorganize the Tvitmartveloba and to investigate the presence of intelligence agents within the university. Journalists were there in the thick of it, reporting all day and night from Liberali magazine and Net Gazzetti. Some had their phones and cameras broken. The protest continued on the 15th. Rector Papava still refused to resign. Police were restricting who could enter the building, allowing only journalists, and some of the Auditorium 215 students were angry because they couldn't get back in and were climbing through the windows. Members of the student government were also sitting in overnight at the university. There were meetings, attempts by the Ministry of Education to negotiate. Finally, in the evening of the 15th of March, the Deputy Education Minister and the rector met with both sides of students. With no outcome, students continued to occupy the university, and Tvitmartveloba continued to demand the rector's resignation. On the 16th of March, yesterday, the protests continued. Evening, they held another meeting and negotiated long into the night, reached a consensus that the university needed a reform in order for a deal to be reached, and students demanded the university leadership and the Ministry of Education sign a special agreement for long-lasting cooperation in the reform process. Students have left the building. They're not occupying Auditorium 215, but said that they will resume their protest. 115, sorry.
Locked.
And said that they will resume their protest by the 16th of April in 1 month if they don't see genuine efforts.
I mean, what a weird thing this is, where you have students campaigning to abolish their self-governing council. I mean, most student protests involve giving more power to the representatives of the students. But as you mentioned, the self-government in TSU has long been a sort of woeful story of political capture by the ruling guys. And indeed, in 2011, there was this nastiness and a lot of sort of thuggish violence between orchestrated allegedly by these guys who were then in the student government, were then completely affiliated with the national movement. But clearly, sort of demonstrating that, you know, many of these sort of bother boys, tough guys, you know, aren't exactly men of their word and principle, switched completely to the Georgian dream in 2012 and have managed to sort of continue to stay loyal to the authorities. And a lot of TSU students don't like it and want to just abolish the whole thing because it seems completely hopeless to reform it.
I mean, there's a long history of this because in the charter of the university, and it has always worked this way, similar to a prison, you had, you know, sort of autonomous self-control, right? So you had student elections where each group would, you know, elect a member by voting, but it was actually signing a petition for an individual. Then each group, for each faculty would then elect the head of the student government. But it was all, of course, prearranged, and that would be somebody with political connections, and often somebody who'd been out of the university for a while. And within the charter of the university, they would get 1% of the funding of the university and could decide where things go. So they had two controls. They had a bunch of money, and when, you know, the University of Vienna would send something to the university saying, "We got a trip for a few kids," it was them that would decide which kids, and it would be their buddies and things like that, which everybody was very annoyed with. And so it tended to be the, you know, the sort of, I don't know, political ass-kissing jerks that were involved in that, no matter who the current ruling regime was.
Which is, to be honest, a great start in Georgian politics.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. And so So that was, it's always been that way. I mean, it was that way under Shevardnadze, and it was, of course, that way, you know, under Komsomol, you know, before. And part of the deal was that then the students would then sort of keep control of the university because, you know, university students are always, and without exception, in the vanguard of political change. For example, when Rustavi Ori was shut down and everybody met in front of the building in Tbilisi Metro in Sabartalo, you know, that night when 2001, they were going to shut it down and stuff like that. The next day they have demonstrations in front of parliament and they're sort of 2, 4, maybe 500 people hanging out there. And then all the university students came from the, you know, 47th campus in Sabartalo all the way down through Vake and Veda, and that was when they couldn't do it.
But the other interesting thing is the continued presence of these ODR guys who were also in the public broadcaster and in a bunch of places where they shouldn't. TI did a rather good investigation into this a couple of years ago, actually naming a bunch of the individual ODR officers who were all pseudo retirees from the services who sit on a chair in the editorial room in public broadcaster and various other institutions like the university, keeping tabs on things. And that's something that both the UNM and the Georgian Dream have sort of vaguely promised to get rid of, and hopefully this will help the process of ending that completely outdated and noxious practice.
I mean, the most interesting thing about this is that they're real demonstrations, and the students are ticked off about real things that affect their lives. It's not politically controlled.
We hate you, Misha, or we hate you, Bidzina.
Right.
Or,
it's real stuff within the university, and I think that's really.
I think it's also part of a new. I mean, what might be, one hesitates to say, but one could be a new way of a wave of Georgian protesting. So, for instance, in the mines in Kibuli, the coal mine, we recently saw sit-ins and protests for weeks, which was then supported by solidarity strikes in Chiatura. And these also seem to be issue-focused with specific demands and got a lot of sympathy and a lot of solidarity from a lot of other groups. Perhaps this is a new leaf for Georgian, you know, direct democracy or participatory democracy.
Yeah, and it's just much more real. I mean, they're real issues rather than being sort of, you know, partisan or, you know, on one side or the other or ginned up by one. I mean, they're partisan in this particular case, but it's more issue-based, like the Chiatura miners and the, you know, there were a bunch of feminist protesters from Tbilisi who went out there and, you know, it's great.
One thing I have to say about the coverage of this university thing that's quite interesting, the you know, ever wonderful civil Georgia hasn't covered this at all, except for a photo essay, which is a bit weird, seeing it's been the hugest story, well, the main story of last week, other than the sex tape thing. So it's a bit weird to see no coverage at all on what many regard to be the premier news and information site coming out of Georgia. But what coverage there has been delightfully and hilariously breathless. and these guys from DF Watch, God bless their hearts, have been reporting on it like it's the fall of Saigon. You know, we're here at ground zero of the student protest, tensions are fraying. It's really, you know, it's a great read, so everyone should take a look at that.
The lari is increasing in value against the dollar. The National Bank's official exchange rate from the 17th of March is $1 to 2.324 lari. Earlier this week, the exchange rate was 1 to 2.417. As a reminder, lari reached its historic low against the dollar last month in February with one U.S. dollar costing 2.49 lari. Prime Minister's Special Envoy for Relations with Russia, Zurab Ashidze, met with Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Grigory Karasin in Prague on the 16th of March for the Ashidze-Karasin talks. Karasin said that, quote, for now the main threats are the upcoming parliamentary elections in Georgia and the obvious increasing anti-Russian provocative rhetoric, which is heard both in Tbilisi and in the international arena, end quote, although it's not. He criticized Defense Minister Khidasheli in particular and said they, those in the Kremlin, are trying to refrain themselves, but their patience has limits. Lots of discussion in Tbilisi and the Kremlin. It's already discussing the October elections. Second day of the talks on 17th of March, Russian Deputy Minister Karasin said that Russia cannot cancel the visa regime with Georgia at this stage, citing safety concerns.
Well, I mean, it's yet again Russia just, you know, reminding everybody why its neighbors don't like it.
in case you forgot.
Quite outrageous, though, and caused a bit of a consternation in Tbilisi with some quite harsh words for Karasin coming from members of the Georgian Dream who often hesitate from criticizing Russia. So even, you know, this may have gone a step too far even for some of the less combative members of the Georgian Parliament. And certainly think singling out the defence minister is, you know, diplomatically right. questionable.
On the 16th of March, the Board of the National Bank named its new member, Koba Gvenitadze.
Check.
Yes. Well, named him as the next president of the National Bank. President Mark Velashvili then confirmed his nomination. Gvenitadze replaces Kazagidze, whose seven-year term expired late February. Gvenitadze is a former economist with the IMF. He was nominated and approved by Parliament of the National Bank earlier in March. Following up on gas stories, on the 4th of March, Energy Minister Kahi Kaladze announced that the new gas deal, where Georgia will receive an additional 500 million cubic meters of gas from Azerbaijan, removes the need to import additional volumes of gas from Russia. State energy company Gazprom, Kaladze and Sokar signed the amended version of the 2011 agreement in Tbilisi on the 4th of March. Sokar heads signed the agreement will secure stable gas supplies to Georgia. An amended version of separate agreement from 2012 was also signed between the chief executives, Georgian State Oil and Gas Corporation, and Sokar Gas Import-Export. Then on the 5th of March, Kaladze revealed that Georgia and Gazprom agreed in principle to keep the existing gas transit terms. Gazprom will pay Georgia 10% Russian gas transport to Armenia via Georgia as a transit fee. The contract will run through the end of 2016. As a reminder, Gazprom wanted to monetize the transit fee and pay it in cash. Instead, the 10% of gas transported to Armenia through Georgia. If monetized, Georgia would not receive enough cash to buy the same amount of gas it now received as a transit fee, since Russia would jack up the price. In separate remarks, Kaladze said that because the second additional gas supplies from Azerbaijan, Georgia is in a stronger position in the talks with Gazprom about transit fee. On Sunday, the 6th of March, the National Movement held another protest against government negotiations with Gazprom. It was panned. It was planned weeks before the deals were made. Protesters form a 5-kilometer long human chain from the government building, which is close to Freedom Square, all the way to the Russian embassy building at the end of Chachavadze Avenue. Just a note, this agreement with Gazprom only lasts for another 9 months, for a few weeks after the election. And my guess is that Kaladze just said, look, you know, just cut us some slack here, and then we'll do whatever the hell you want 5 seconds after the election.
Well, who knows what's going to happen next year? I mean, with the gas and oil, well, the oil price being so low, the gas price is linked to the oil price, and indeed what's happening in Azerbaijan. It seems unlikely to me that Georgia finally stood up for itself and looked at SOCAR partners directly in the eye and said, give us more gas. That doesn't seem particularly likely, knowing how SOCAR operates. But SOCAR, it's certainly true, is actually itself buying increased Russian gas in order to keep the pressure up in the oil wells which it needs for the BTC. So there's a whole crazy gas thing going on in the South Caucasus, and basically there's not enough gas right now until the Chardonnays 2 thing comes online sometime in 2017 or 2018. There isn't enough Azerbaijani gas. So Azerbaijan is buying Russian gas to keep its stuff going while selling Azeri gas to Georgia. SOCAR is. So there's a very strange game going on, which is probably beyond even Kaladze's pay grade.
Russian forces are building a new road in South Ossetia near the administrative boundary line at the Jaryasheni village. On the 7th of March, Prime Minister Kvitikashvili announced the Georgian Dream, or Otsneba, ruling coalition will initiate a draft amendment to the constitution that would define marriage as a union between a man and a woman, effectively barring in the constitution the possibility of same-sex marriage, because that's such an incredibly important priority for Georgia right now. Some groups have responded with the initiative, saying that it is a populist move ahead of the October parliamentary elections aimed at winning support from the Conservative Society and the Georgian Orthodox Church. The Republican Party, which is a member of the Otsneba Coalition, said that they will not support the bill because it is a fruitless initiative. Draft will likely not get the needed 113 votes in parliament required for any constitutional amendment. They were not against the idea of it. In principle, however, as a note, Article 36 of the Georgian Constitution currently reads that marriage shall be based on the equality of rights and free will of spouses. The Otsneba proposal is expected to replace spouses with a man and a woman. Civil Code already specifies that marriage is a voluntary union of a man and a woman. On the 9th of March, Free Democrats, led by Irakli Alasania, came out in support of the Otsneba proposed constitutional ban on marriage equality.
So that's very disappointing. It's going to allow anyone that doesn't come out in support of this proposed ban to be painted as, you know, evil Western homosexualists who are corrupting Georgia's youth or something like that. And the whole, that was, which is the whole reason for bringing this thing up now, 2 months before, or several months before an election. So it's a really sort of disgraceful piece of electioneering and fanning the flames of anti-Western homophobic sentiment in Georgia for a short-term political gain. And I thoroughly deprecate the Prime Minister for giving it the time of day.
I think it's that, and also it is a way to, it's a purely divisive tactic within Parliament to try and divide the Republicans out. Everybody knows the Republicans don't want to deal with this, and to try and sort of push the pro-Western groups, which are the ones that realize this is pointless, stupid, and irrelevant, and the Europeans and Americans are not going to like it, to try and
drive a wedge.
Drive a wedge, exactly. And it, so it really has to do with sort of inter-parliamentary wranglings. Following up on Maestro TV, on the 7th of March, Public Registry approved Levon Gachechiladze as the new director of Maestro TV. As a reminder, there was a change in shareholders in Maestro TV earlier this year. Director General Baya Garabadze was fired and replaced with Gachechiladze, who is the brother of the new majority shareholder, Gyorgy Gachechiladze.
After and a former presidential candidate and leader of the so-called United Opposition, and famously not the brightest bulb on the trip.
Yes, after Gachechiladze was officially approved, the Maestro staff didn't even allow the new director general into the building. There is also a dispute in using the Maestro logo and name, which will be taken to court later the month. Maestro was at first airing without a logo, then under M24, which sounds like a boy band. Following up on visas to the EU, the 9th of March, the European Commission put forward a legislative proposal to allow Georgian citizens visa-free travel to the Schengen area. It has to be approved by the European Parliament and the EU member states before it can go into force. When approved, Georgian citizens with biometric passports will be able to enter the Schengen area without a visa for 90 days in any 180-day period. The Interior Ministry arrested a man suspected of being one of the two attackers who beat and shot Free Democrats politician Alexei Petriashvili in Tbilisi earlier in February. The man was arrested several days after the attack in Borjomi. The Interior Minister said that the case was solved and didn't reveal more on possible motives. They're looking to find the other attacker. The man was ordered in pretrial detention. He told investigators that he and Petriashvili knew each other before, so the investigators say the attack was likely for personal reasons. Of course they would. Petriashvili denies knowing the man and says the attack was ordered. Meanwhile, the next day, the alleged attacker's uncle was arrested on unrelated charges. The defense lawyer of the alleged attacker says it is an attempt to mount pressure on his client. Petriashvili was discharged from the hospital on the 8th of March, 11 days after the attack.
Why do all the old lags go to Borjomi when they're on the run? Everyone seems to get arrested in Borjomi.
Why is that?
I guess you need to get out of Tbilisi, and Borjomi is quite nice. But what do you think were the real motivations behind this quite serious shooting and beating?
I don't know. I don't know him. I mean, he's got a reputation as sort of a
Man about town,
man familiar with the street.
Right.
Which could be why they would, he pulled out early of Otsneba, I don't know. Hard to say. I don't know enough about his dealings. I mean, I think the idea that it is purely personal seems implausible to me. But it was a strange deal. I mean, they shot him several times.
Hit him in the head with a hammer.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it seems like, but
punishment beating is what it seems like.
Yeah. So I don't
shooting.
Know. On the 8th of March, U.S. military officials reported that they may have killed Daesh commander Omar al-Shishani, a.k.a. Tarkhan Batirashvili, who's from Pankizi Gorge, in a special targeted airstrike in the Syrian town of al-Shadadi. On Friday, the 4th of March, U.S. military intelligence officials were still assessing whether the airstrike actually did kill Batirashvili. About 12 other Daesh militants were deemed to have been killed in the attack. The next day, on the 9th of March, the monitor group Syrian Observatory for Human Rights told the media that the U.S. airstrike badly wounded Batirashvili, but did not kill him. Citing unnamed sources, they said he was taken to a hospital in Raqqa, which is the Daesh de facto capital. Then, On the 13th of March, Syrian Observatory for Human Rights reported that Batirashvili was considered to be clinically dead for several days, that he can't breathe on his own, and is hooked up to machines. The Pentagon also confirmed al-Shishani was dead, that he subsequently died of his injuries.
We shall see. I wouldn't be surprised if al-Shishani is back.
Well, it's funny because
this is not the first time.
I mean, it's happened lots of times. Then it was reported, oh, he's dead. Then immediately, within like a couple of hours, oh, he's not dead. And then now the New York Times has said he's dead. And that's, but who knows? We'll see.
The New York Times might have been wrong.
They might. Following up on other stories on Georgian citizens and Daesh, Tbilisi City Court sentenced three men to prison last week for associating with or assisting foreign terrorist organization. They were all arrested in June 2015, one in Pankisi, the other in Tbilisi International Airport, en route to Syria via Turkey. One man was sentenced to 14 years in prison, was found guilty of recruiting and sending two young men from Pankisi, aged 16 and 18 at the time, to Syria in April 2015. The other two men were sentenced to 11 and 10 years in prison for assisting a foreign terrorist organization. Georgian citizen Beslan Mukhtarov was confirmed as the 17th Georgian killed in the Syria conflict. He was from an ethnic Azeri village of Karajala. He was a medical student in Istanbul. According to Turkish security officials, Mukhtarov crossed into Syria in November 2015, joined the Islamist group Jabhat al-Nusra, which is allied with al-Qaeda. He was killed in December 2015 in a Russian airstrike near the Syrian-Turkish border. It's unclear whether he was an active combatant in Syria or was treating wounded fighters. Reportedly, he had been under observation by Turkish intelligence as a potential terror suspect from 2010. On the 10th of March, the governors of Shidikartli and Mskhetu Mtianeti regions resigned. The prime minister's office did not give information as to why. They were replaced by their deputy governors. Unlike the heads of municipalities or Gamgeblebi, who are directly elected, provincial governors are appointed by the prime minister. And by the way, the fact of these governors, who actually are the ones in control of everything, illustrate how there still is really not much local government in Georgia, and it's a problem for administration and democracy, because they can't really do anything. They don't have any money. There's not a serious formulaic funding mechanism or tax base that they have, and it's not good.
But there's more. I mean, now there's directly elected mayors of places like Batumi and Kutaisi. That's been a significant change for the better in the last local government reform.
Absolutely. But it hasn't really helped much in rayons, which are still important administrative units. For example, the whole system of preschool at schools are a mess because who is responsible for monitoring them and accrediting them? They don't have any money, and it's just a mess. Following up on last month's story, the two parties within the Georgian Dream Oats Neighbor Coalition, Republican Party and Industry Will Save Georgia, were publicly arguing for weeks. The leader of the industrialist Gogi Topadze accused Defense Minister Khidasheli of fraud in the October 2015 by-election in Sagareja, while the Republicans accused lawmaker Topadze of pursuing Russian propaganda narratives and being a big dum-dum.
Topadze believes that every household should have a portrait of Stalin.
Yeah, he's a total goofus, actually. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing that the guy is still, in the coalition and in parliament at all. Prime Minister
provides the beer,
but he doesn't even have that much money, does he?
I mean, Kazbegi is a fairly big enterprise.
All right. Prime Minister Kvitakashvili then issued a public statement calling on the two parties to solve their problems behind closed doors. Kvitakashvili and the Republicans then met. They revealed that they are preparing a strategic partnership agreement with the Georgian Dream Democratic Georgia Party, which is the largest party within Otsneva. Foreign Minister Misha Janelidze visited Azerbaijan on the 6th to 7th of March. This was days after Energy Minister Kaladze signed a gas agreement with SOCAR. President Mark Velashvili then paid a visit to Azerbaijan on the 10th of March. Economy Minister Dima Kumsishvili was on an official visit to the U.S. starting last week in Washington. He met with U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, IMF, and the OPEC. Kumsishvili is trying to attract them to be an investor in the Anaklia deep sea port. Foreign Minister Misha Janelidze is on an official visit to the U.S. this week. He's meeting with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and other White House officials. During the visit, Secretary of State John Kerry announced that he will visit Tbilisi likely in June to show the depth of support the U.S. has for Georgia. Deputy Foreign Minister David Zalikiani revealed that U.S. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon will pay an official visit to Georgia. The dates are still being arranged. Defense Minister Tina Kohita-Shelley hosted a group of high-level officials from the NATO Supreme Allied Command Europe.
So just to go back briefly to the industrialists versus Republicans, do you think that Bidzina has authorized Topadze to undermine the Republicans? Because he's doing so in such a sort of outrageous public way that you'd have thought it must have higher blessing.
Yes.
And why is Bidzina going with this complete loser? Or this discredit, you know, a guy who doesn't really have a political party, he's just a one-man band with a few cronies. I mean, what's the game plan for doing that?
Well, I don't know, actually. I have no idea. I think it's a little bit complicated. I think there's who knows what is in the mind of BI, but I think on the one hand, I think he's trying to get out.
So why undermine his coalition and drive it apart with using these guys who are no good?
Well, it's kind of, you remember back in the Shevardnadze days, everybody was always like, oh, he's the master balancer. You know, he's always like balancing everybody. And I think that there's kind of, you know, it feels like the Republicans, you know, there's a lot of jealousy of the Republicans. Usupashvili runs everything and is a smart guy. Most of the rest of them are a bunch of clowns. You know, his wife Tiniko is a defense minister, you know, and they've got a lot of power and influence and not a lot of voters behind them, you know. And so...
So you think Bidzina is showing his strength, he's showing his mettle by allowing his attack dog Topadze to savage them in the media?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I really have no idea. I think, you know, whether... I think Topadze is in some ways a difficult person to control, and I think that Bidzina's moving out, and so Topadze shoots his mouth off, and, you know, Bidzina doesn't come in and, you know, deal with it. It's the same thing with this, you know, this ridiculous man and woman marriage situation, you know. I mean, what probably Bidzina does not want this to be happening. So is he supposed to come in and say, do this, don't do this, whatever else? Well, nobody wants him to be involved, and so it creates sort of a complicated situation. But, I could imagine, you know, him being frustrated with the Republicans and less so with Topadze. But I'm guessing. Georgia and Abkhaz and South Ossetian authorities held a rare prisoner exchange deal last week on the 10th of March. The prisoner swap took place at the Abkhaz administrative border. Georgia released 4 Ossetian prisoners in exchange. 12 long-term prisoners were released. High-level officials from all 3 sides were there, praising it as a diplomatic feat and praising Abkhazia's role in cutting the deal. On the 16th of March, the President's administration presented Georgi Mark Velashvili's new economic minister, Maya Melikidze. She's a graduate of Harvard University Business School, European Management School, and has years of experience in the banking and management sector. Worked at the National Bank and Ernst & Young. Japan has committed $38 million to help Georgia upgrade the country's main east-west highway. Japan will provide almost $800,000 to finance 3 humanitarian projects in Georgia. They're providing medical equipment for a gynecological and cancer screening center in Akatsuki, a project to clear explosive remnants of war and mines in Gardabani, Sagarejo, and Terjola, and to construct water wells in Gremi and Kvareli. Who knew there were mines in Gardabani, Sagarejo, and Terjola, but evidently. U.S. is offering 14 million euro to Georgia for technical cooperation to support Georgia's implementation of the EU-Georgia Association Agreement signed in June 2014. Development projects. Government has approved a proposal by local company Cadieri 2015 to build a new factory in Marneuli. They will produce mineral products. It's under the Produce in Georgia State Program. Also as a part of Produce in Georgia, local company AgroArma Group will invest about 1.2 million lari to build factories for several enterprises in the Ahmeta village in Kakheti to produce essential oils, animal feed, and textiles. Samcha Javakheti, the government, and the World Bank are co-financing a deal to pave several kilometers of road that goes to the medieval Sapada Monastery. Ministry of Agriculture is co-financing the cost of beehives for local beekeepers in Svaneti and Racha. About 100 agricultural cooperatives will receive 7,000 beehives. Beekeepers participating in the state program will also be able to check the quality of their honey at the Ministry of Agriculture's laboratory for free. Ultimate goal is export to Europe. There was a public exchange between the National Movement parliamentarian Akaki Bobakhidze and Justice Minister Teodosiu Lukiani. There's a combo. He claimed that the Justice Ministry was building a community center in a village. Tsulukiani was boasting about it, but in fact, the construction workers hadn't received their salary yet. She responded on Facebook that construction isn't over and that at least they didn't threaten to imprison the workers if they don't finish the way the National Movement used to. The Ministry of Defense opened the first prayer house for Muslims serving in the armed forces at the 3rd Infantry Brigade headquarters in Kutaisi. As a reminder, this comes after the Ministry of Defense completed a recruitment drive in Pankisi Gorge to attract youth to a military career, while Defense Minister Khidashil...
Isn't that a good idea? I mean, that's exactly... So, basically, the guy we were just discussing, Omar al-Shashani, also known as Tarkan Batirashvili, was the chief minister of war for the Islamic State, and cut his teeth in the Georgian army being trained by the Americans. So all those conspiracy theories that tell you that America's behind ISIS, well, in one small sense, so this one guy, it certainly is, because he received all his extremely expensive training from American Special Forces people before he was kicked out of the army and went and joined Islamic State. So one questions if these new recruits up in Pankisi might not choose to do this in order to follow more closely in Omar al-Shashani's footsteps. Because they were precisely those. He joined the Georgian army, got trained by the Americans, left the army, and went to join, and indeed lead ISIS. It's a little bit worrying.
I mean, there's a difference between joining the Georgian army and getting, you know, special operations training.
That's what happened to Shinjani, though. That's right. What happened to Tarkan Batirashvili. He got the best training the American army could provide before going to be ISIS's main general.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Probably they're keeping an eye on that. You know, I'm guessing you're not the first person to ask that question. The Defense Minister Khidashili visited in January. She promised that there would not be discrimination against Muslims in the military and that they would be able to pursue their religious prayers and dietary needs.
This is, of course, a very good thing, by the way. But going back
Absolutely.
To what you were saying before about the Republicans maybe grating some of the Georgian Dream leadership, this is precisely one of those things. That many nationalists and other less reputable politicians in the Georgian Dream have a huge problem with. Anything that smacks of official recognition of the fact that 10 or 20% of Georgian citizens are not Orthodox Christians is a red flag to a bull for them. So this will certainly not please the Republicans' detractors.
Absolutely. And, I mean, Otsneba does house a number of pretty serious, you know,
racists?
Racists and people who specifically operationally have been involved in the harassment of Muslims and those preventing mosques from happening, both in villages and in bigger places. The government will open a technology park in Zugdidi in western Georgia. The first tech park opened in Tbilisi in January 2016.
It's been a huge success.
Are you kidding me?
No, it hasn't been a huge success.
The 5-star Crown Plaza Borjomi Hotel is officially opened. Intercontinental Hotels Group invested $32 million to build it.
Read the TripAdvisor reviews.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
No way. Are they funny?
So when they opened for the soft launch in last year's record-breaking hot summer, there was no air conditioning in the whole building. And so you have a lot of people who shelled out top dollar for their 4-star room in the funny hotel complaining about the 38-degree heat in their bedrooms.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, got to check that out. Two Georgian soldiers currently serving in the NATO-led Resolute Support Mission in Afghanistan received awards for their exemplary service at Bagram Air Base. National Agency for State Property sold the Tsiskadi Sanatorium in Skaltubo in western Georgia for 160,000 lari. It was on the list of properties the government wanted to privatize. Local company Argo bought it and will invest $5 million to build a hotel. This is the third sanatorium in Skaltubo that will be transformed into a hotel. A National Agency of State Property also sold property in Bakuriani to Gino Wellness Group. They will build a 4 million lari health and recreation center. There are plans to create a recreational space that will replace the parking lot of the Radisson Blue Hotel in Tbilisi. Thank God. The land is owned by the Silk Road Group. They announced a closed competition for proposals and designs. The proposal by architectural studio Graft Architects won.
Graft Architects.
Yeah. All right. So now there are discussions and collaborations. There's no announcement yet on when it will be done or how much is being invested. There are discussions and plans to open a new checkpoint at the Larsi border crossing in the Russian-Georgian border to facilitate freight traffic between Armenia and Russia, according to Armenia's transport ministry. Georgia's national wrestling team earned the highest number of points at the European Wrestling Championship in 2016, held in Riga. The national rugby team, the Lelos, won their fourth game of the 2016 European Nations Cup against Russia. The next match will be against Romania. It will be held in Tbilisi on the 19th of March. Didgori medevac vehicles, which are produced by the Georgian Military Engineering Center Delta, were presented in Saudi Arabia at the 2016 North Thunder Military Exercise closing ceremony. As a reminder, Delta scored $1 million Saudi contract to make armored medical evacuation vehicles in January 2016. It was reported that an unnamed Georgian billionaire is trying to buy the 11th century Javadi Monastery in Jerusalem for several million dollars. There are speculations it's Bidzina, but no confirmation on that yet. The monastery functions as a Greek Orthodox church and has a fresco of medieval Georgian poet Shoto Rustaveli, though it was vandalized and damaged in 2014. Georgian business people have attempted to buy the church before. French writer Frederick Begbeder was in Tbilisi over the weekend and had a big following of fans. The Tbilisi Zoo is getting a new bird, two species of parrots, as a gift from the Riga Zoo. They're being brought through Batumi Port. It costs 15,000 euros to move them. According to the 2016 World Happiness Report commissioned by the UN, Georgia ranked 126th in happiness among 156 countries. Hopefully we'll get some advisors from Bhutan to come by and figure it out. Parliamentary news, or Denmark. Parliamentary news, Parliament's Human Rights Committee approved a bill punishing loud noise as an administrative offense. It still has to be adopted by Parliament later in the spring session. If it is, it will go into effect on the 1st of September. On the 16th of March, an Otsneba and a National Movement parliamentarian got into a fistfight in Parliament. An argument began when lawmakers accused the government of blackmail and leaking the illegally recorded sex tapes. Meme this week is a photos going viral on Facebook by British model Richard Baydoul of him side-by-side looking very much like the iconic photo of Shoto Rustaveli. He comments, "Georgian poet Shoto Rustaveli and I were clearly separated at birth." Reprinted all over Facebook. In Jam News, political analyst Giannotti looks at the role the Republicans have in Otsneba coalition, recent infighting with other coalition partners. He comments that the Republicans are the only party in the coalition that actually believe in Euro-Atlantic integration and is not just paying lip service to it. They also have not been successful in winning elections by themselves, and so they want to bandwagon into a stronger partner in order to get into Parliament and government. He argues that the Republicans will definitely stay within the Otsneba coalition for elections.
What is Jam News?
Jam News is a relatively new media outlet that came out of Go Group Media. It's funded by the British Embassy. They've got some smart people. Georgia Today follows up on Russian telecommunications company Vimpelcom, which is looking to buy a Georgian internet provider, Caucasus Online, is essentially a Kremlin subsidiary and offering way over market price for it. David Lee, the head of Magticom, explains that Vimpelcom is known to be a corrupt company, which it surely is, and if it enters the Georgian market, there will be no way to stop Russia from monitoring and controlling the internet network in Georgia. A group of NGOs in Georgia, including the hardest working NGO in the Caucasus, TI Georgia, have come out against the same, saying that it could be a national security risk given Russia's cyber assault capabilities.
Okay, well, for a start, Vimpelcom already do operate in the Georgian market, owning Beeline, the third largest mobile phone provider in the country. So they are already here among us. They walk among us. The Russians do. David Lee raises an interesting point about Russian ownership of telecommunications infrastructure, but he's not disinterested in this because his company, Magti, also made an offer for Caucasus Online, and the offer was not nearly as high as Vimpelcom's. So he's not completely disinterested. I do take his point that it's perhaps not a good idea, even if it's just the retail business, because Caucasus Online there was initial allegations, indeed voiced by David Lee, who said that they were trying to sell the undersea cable by which Georgia is connected to the internet. That's now apparently not on the table, and it's just Caucus Online's retail business, which is about 30-40% of the total internet business in Georgia. So yes, there are concerns with VimpelCom buying it, but then there's also concerns that MACTI and indeed Geocell and all mobile phone and internet providers in Georgia seem only too happy to roll over to the government's abuse of privacy, as we've seen with these sex tapes and other things, releasing secretly recorded phone footage, emails, etc., to the government at any time with very little oversight. And when that was under discussion in 2012, with This Affects You Too, it was David Lee who was at the vanguard of people saying, no, there's nothing to worry about. So I take everything he says in this regard, with all due respect, with a bit of a pinch of salt.
I think that's a false equivalency. I mean, you're absolutely right what you say about, the mobile operators going along with the national movement and, putting a giant tap on their servers and, being able to do whatever they want completely illegally and unethically.
So should a company that does that then
Geocell, as they say in the UK, hang on, there was a lot more pushback from them, from the Finn who ran the place at the time, than with MACTI, and Geocell should be applauded for that, although, no longer, and that doesn't matter because that relationship is over. With this, we're talking about a company that is the Kremlin, that is a wholly owned subsidiary of a country that is occupying a significant portion of Georgia, and having them control the internet in Georgia is a different matter.
It's controlling the smaller company that does retail business. I agree with you. There is definitely a national security concern. I merely point out that MACTI...
So you're a Kremlin stooge now.
No, I merely point out that MACTI, which is the other company in the bidding, which didn't bid nearly as much as VimpelCom, which they don't have nearly as much money, has not been always the greatest protector of the rights of its users. And I think that's something to bear in mind when we listen to businessmen who have an interested position in this talk about this stuff.
Well, but that's just because they know a lot about the deal. And from what I've heard, it's what the Kremlin, through its subsidiary, offered was just way above market price.
Sure, I've heard that too. But my point is that had the other company won, we still probably have to watch what we say on the phone and what we type in our emails.
Yeah, but they're unlikely to actually, cut it off in times of stress.
Okay.
Voice of America speaks with Muslims in Georgia to uncover what lures people to join up fighters with Daesh and radical groups in Syria. Salafism is growing among the youth, and part of the lure is money. The youth are told that they'll get thousands when they get to Syria, when they think they can send the money home to their families. Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty reporter Liz Fuller writes that South Ossetia leadership is not happy about the military agreement that is part of the Treaty on Integration with Russia signed last year. The agreement entails South Ossetia's units' subordination to Russia's military. Some factions in South Ossetia are okay with it, such as the parliamentary speaker who wants closer integration with Russia, while others, including President Tibilov, are not. There's also talk about who will run South Ossetia's run in South Ossetia's April 2017 presidential elections, and some are saying that will include previous President Edward Kokoiti, who is also in favor of joining with Russia. There are Democracy and Freedom Watch's photos from the Tbilisi State University student protests and Civil.ge's photos, as well as Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's video report, where you can see and feel some of the tensions. Eurasianet, Monica Elena has an interesting piece on bread and status in Georgia, how Georgia's relatively new middle class looks to buy European-style bread rather than the cheaper traditional shoti bread. In Huffington Post, analyst Armine Sakayan writes a generous commentary about how Georgia's saying that public protests in Georgia were able to thwart the Gazprom deal and congratulates Georgia for doing that. Stanford Alumni Magazine has a bit on the university's special language program, which tries to fulfill all students' requests for rare languages, even if there's only one student in the class. That is now the case with Georgian, they say, which is back at Stanford after a long absence because of an archaeology student's work in Eastern Europe. All this stuff to read will be posted on our forum. This week's dive bar number is 17. This is the percent of teachers in Georgia who pass their professional exams in the latest exam in January 2016, according to